We are SC podcast for Tuesday, September 9th. Stanford game review. Gary Pasquis joined by Jeremy Hogue and Mike Lamb. And guys, let's talk some of the numbers of this game. All nine Stanford drives ended inside the SC 32 or less. They came away with 10 points. USC, 59 total offensive plays after 105 last week. 16 first downs for the Trojans after 37 last week. 285 yards passing for Stanford, averaging 13 yards from completion. Only two sacks by SC, but two timely ones, the final two plays of the game, including the forced fumble by Tavai at the end. And only 52 scholarship players traveled by the Trojans. And yet, scoreboard at the end, USC 13, Stanford 10. Let's get a quick thought from each of you. Jeremy, start us off.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this because it makes it seem bad for USC, but I really left the game thinking that Stanford lost that game a little bit more than USC won that game. But regardless, right, if you're at USC and you're in the second game of your year with the young team that you have, new coaching staff, and you come away with a victory is a victory. And, you know, again, you do give, obviously, the Trojans a ton of credit, especially on defense, with those nine possessions deep in USC territory and turning them away time and time again, even if there were a lot of blunders by Stanford. You know, at the end of the day, you take it, you move on, you get a big win this week against Boston College, and then get a bye week. I mean, look at the season ahead. I think the momentum around USC is just going to be crazy. But I think, you know, this will be, you sort of saw the celebration after the game, this will be sort of a defining moment for this young Sarkisian team, this young Trojan team full of a lot of freshmen and young players. I mean, the way they were celebrating after that game, it was a real coming together. You sort of felt like a real special moment was happening, and you know, I don't want to read too much into it, but that's definitely the feeling I had.
Yeah, I might be a little rosier than Jeremy, and that's unusual. And it just is. I'm usually pretty cynical about this stuff, and I would say that Stanford, in retrospect, USC caught them at the right time. They weren't ready. Their offensive line had not come together, and all the concerns that USC had, I think, kind of reared its head on Stanford's side of the field. And to me, that goes back to the discussion we had last week about how well-coached USC is right now, how the young players are able to contribute, how you're able to pull together this offensive line. And something that I loved about it was everybody held their mud, except for the coach and the athletic director, but we'll get into that later. But the players kind of hung in there, and they grew. And then you talk about the sacks later, and if Sua Cravens doesn't miss on that blitz, that's what I took away from this. I love what Justin Wilcox did. He set things up. They looked at the way Stanford was protecting. They figured out a way to get it done. It was so timely. When you're in a game like that, I mean, Gary, you start talking about the numbers from the Fresno State game to the Stanford game. Well, you can't have two more different scenarios on opponents that you're playing. Fresno State was not up to the level of Stanford. Obviously, we know that. Physically, Stanford has always been a challenge. You knew it was going to be that type of a game. So to be able to have the game the week before where everybody might feel pretty good about themselves, and then to get into a slugfest like you're going to get into with Stanford, I really walked away from that going, that was great, because of all the situations, all the circumstances. It was crazy. I mean, that's as crazy a game as I can recall watching in what, 5 years? I mean, you guys tell me when you've seen a crazier set of circumstances in a game, and for USC to come away with a win, with a kicker that learned how to, you know, play in the pressure moment a year ago against that opponent, I really came away feeling pretty good about that.
And I thought it was interesting, Jeremy, to go to that point that you made about, you know, kind of stealing one. How often does USC steal a game? You know, when the other team probably performed better and had better numbers, it doesn't happen very often for the Trojans where you come away with one saying, ooh, nice to get that one, probably didn't deserve it.
Yeah, if you think about the Pete Carroll years, you know, you always think of, okay, boy, they really got up for the big games and oftentimes won the big games, and it was and impressed the nation in these big games, and then it was all, you know, oh, we're at Cal, it's Washington State, it's, you know, whoever it might be that sort of sneaks up on you, you end up in a close game, and you sort of drop one, and that sort of kept us from some national championship games during the Pete Carroll years. you know, I almost had the feeling in this game that it's like, you know, were we that, I can't say that we snuck up on Stanford, obviously, we're a top 15 team, but it's like, you know, just like you said, Gary, I mean, they had the better numbers. I mean, 413 yards to 291, they had 21 first downs, we had 16, you know, they punted twice, we punted four times, you know, they had, you know, all those sort of things that, in my mind, at the end of the day, we did. I hate to say it, Mike. I love the enthusiasm for our Trojans, and I'm getting there. But to get this one early in the year, I do feel like we stole it. Later in the year, as our team is more mature, and maybe Stanford will be better at the end of the year too, but I think we have more upside and more growth between now and the end of the year than Stanford does. And I think at the end of the year, if we were to meet this team again in a Pac-12 championship game, I think we're dramatically far superior than what to what we played Saturday compared to Stanford. I think their upside and their growth is limited compared to ours. But, you know, hey, it's exactly what we said last week. We sat here and talked about it and said, you know, well, you know, make them, you know, maybe some special teams, and I'm concerned about our special teams. Well, look what our special teams did.
Yeah.
We had a kicker. We had a kicker made that kick at the end of the game that in the middle of camp they were talking about opening his job for competition because he was so inconsistent. And, you know, and it's their kicker that at the end of the day misses two field goals. And they are the ones with two turnovers. We have zero turnovers in the game. I mean, those, to me, it's a play here or a play there. You talk about the Sua Cravens missed sack. If he'd have made that, maybe the game's over at that point. You know, I look at it earlier in the game and say, if we don't if we pick up the blitz, it wasn't even really a blitz, and we hit Nelson Aguilar on the fourth and short and keep the chains moving, maybe that wins the game for the Trojans. But at the same time, you look at their side, and they say, you know, they get all the momentum in the world after the penalties and Pat Hayden rushing to the sidelines and all that stuff, and then they turn around and fumble a handoff and hand us the ball back. I mean, it's a play here or a play there, and that game goes either way. And for USC to come out of Palo Alto with a win on Saturday for this team early in the season is, to me, just, you know, you couldn't write a better script for Steve Sarkisian right now.
Yeah, I want to start off talking about a couple players. Let's go three players, and I just want to get a thought from each of you, a quick one. Three guys that I thought stood out. Let's go with Leonard Williams, a guy at the beginning of the game who has to pull himself out because his ankle is bothering him so much. He ends up leading the team in tackles with 11 tackles. Big-time performance.
Yeah, Leonard is the leader of our defense, absolutely by far and away seems to be the best player on the field every week that he's on that field, going up against, you know, probably the best offensive line that USC will play against this year, and he ends up with 10 tackles, I mean, you know, being double-teamed almost every play. You know, the goal line stand, I know Sua got in there and made a play too, but I don't know if you guys saw Leonard takes on the guy, you know, sheds him, goes low, gets back up and throws himself in and is right there in that play as well. I just, he is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent that we're only going to see for a few more games at USC before he moves on, but you know, it's a guy like that that, to me, you know, if you're a Steve, you think about when Pete Carroll came in and he inherited some of the players that he inherited that stepped up and really became the champions and helped, you know, build what the atmosphere and the environment that he wanted to create. Leonard Williams is that guy that Steve Sarkisian and his staff have inherited that is going to be this, I think, sort of, you know, MVP of the team almost this season. Hard for a defensive lineman to be that, but I think he is that, you know, really sets the tone for this program in the Steve Sarkisian era.
Well, when your best player is the guy that is the emotional leader as well, I always think that's a great thing because sometimes you have that quiet leader and it's all well and nice, and you try to respond to them. But to think of Leonard Williams and the fact that he wasn't supposed to play, came back, warmed up, played in a big game, he did a lot of things for his team. You know, the one was to be able to fight through things. I think it made a statement about the importance of the game. And he didn't hurt himself in the eyes of anybody in the National Football League thinking about, you know, this is a guy that I want to have on my team. And there's something to be said for a player that can do that and can take on that lead role. I thought he did that, and he spoke volumes by the fact that he performed as well as he did. I don't know how hurt he was. I mean, he could have been really hurt, and it would have been one of those things where you just get through it. And I have to assume that it's as serious as we thought it was. I have to assume that he set the tone for this team and that defense. I think it was critical. I don't know if later on we'll be able to really overstate how important that was in that game to have him in there.
I agree. And then the one guy who was the constant on the offensive side of the ball, Mike, you mentioned last week as a guy that you may have enjoyed watching run, but Buck Allen and his consistent effort to truck that ball through that defense all game long. And really, I thought it came out in the fourth quarter. I thought that's when he really took over the ball game.
Well, he is very critical in a game plan to try to run the football. You need the guy that can do it, that can tough it out, that can understand what's going on. And Jeremy and I can both attest to this. You got to have a good offensive line. Yeah, we get that. But many times it's a running back that makes the offensive line. And let me kind of build on that, if I might. It's the guy that has the patience to stick with something, that understands where to cut, that sees when everybody goes strong, he can cut back weak and understand who's going to block and when. And I just see that from Buck. He gets it. He understands it. You have to have the physical tools to get it done. That's a given. So I don't even want to get into the superlatives on, you know, what he can do and how fast he can run. And I just think all that stuff is overrated. It's the guy that knows it, that understands it, that can utilize the blocks in front of him. And for Buck, that's it. Then the last part, he seems to have a sense of where the marker is, how to get there, in critical junctures of the game. So for that part of it, I've become a bigger fan of his, if that's possible, every week and every time that I see him out there.
Well, I thought about you, Mike, a lot while watching the game, because here you were last week, you know, praising Buck Allen as being, you know, this guy, and I'm sitting, yeah, you know, okay. I loved Buck last year, loved what he did. I'm not poo-pooing him in any way. But, you know, okay, the offense is, we're going to spread it around. We're going to do a lot of stuff. And then he, to me, was absolutely the offensive MVP for the Trojans on Saturday. And you were popping into my mind, Mike. But I think, you know, and hopefully he goes off this week at Boston College, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, has a big day and puts himself in the Heisman race. Who cares? Who knows? But I will say, I couldn't agree more with Mike that, you know, these running backs where you sit there and you evaluate 40 times and, you know, long jump and all this different stuff, to me, is absolutely worthless. It's all about, I mean, you got to have the physical tools, like Mike said, but it is all about that sort of innate ability to sort of be that back that can be in tune with your offensive line and with the blocking schemes, and sort of like Mike said, have that patience, know when to cut, see the lanes, have unbelievable vision, and just have those innate instincts that you can't coach. And Buck seems to have that. Now, there is something special about him. I'll be honest with you. You know, Mike blocked for some great backs. I never blocked for a back like Buck Allen. Wish I had. You know, he is fantastic. And his ability to sort of, on a very slight ways, make guys miss, cut at the right time, explode into, know when to explode into contact versus avoid contact, all those things. You know, he's a special, special guy. I'm not sure we win that game if Buck Allen isn't in that backfield. In fact, I'd probably predict that we do not win that game if Buck Allen's not in that backfield on Saturday.
And then finally, Andre Hadary, second year in a row making a game-winning field goal to beat Stanford. But I thought the side note after his game-winning field goal was the kickoff deep into the end zone on the next kickoff, not allowing Montgomery a long return. I thought that was great. Give me your thoughts on a kicker who can nail a kick like that 2 years in a row.
I'll give you the oldest cliche that I have that's but it's my own, all right? But and I think it's not a cliche, it's almost an axiom. There's nothing better than a good kicker, and there's nothing worse than a bad kicker. And you know, if you miss that, I mean, how deflated are you? And you think about it, and that's his job. That's what he's got to do. Somebody that can come through in the clutch and can make those for you, you have no idea how that can lift the spirits and catapult a team to have that confidence in a guy that can do it. And I mean, that affects everybody on the team. When it's in your mind, yeah, we've got somebody that can make a 50-yard field goal. All we have to do is get to this spot. That's how you win games like that. So you hate to overstate it, but if Sark doesn't have the confidence in him to make that. How different is that game, and how different do you think the outcome is?
Let me tag that really quick, Mike. I want that to be the next topic, kind of talking about Sark's confidence in going for that field goal, the confidence that he's showing playing freshman in big situations, playing guys, Gertler, Temple, who had been languishing on the bench before, but getting them spot action when you need it. That emotional outburst that he had after the penalty, which, yeah, you got the penalty, but that little chain of events, Sark getting the penalty, Hayes Poulard getting tossed out, and then getting emotional, Hayden and everything, that seemed to spark something in the team. When Sark has that kind of confidence, how much does that rub off on the team?
Well, tell me this, Gary. I mean, did you not feel that things were going in the wrong direction from a momentum standpoint? I mean, Sark gets that penalty. Hayes Poulard gets kicked out of the game. You sit there and you think, oh, here we go again. Pac-12 officials and USC, you know, we're going to end up losing this game, and it's going to be largely aided and abetted by this Pac-12 officiating crew. You know, when's the last time you saw a sideline penalty called when the ball is, you know, down in the red zone? I mean, are you kidding me on a field goal? And then you get the Hayes Poulard targeting thing, which I think is just a horrible rule to begin with. You can say that it's textbook that he hit him face to face, but I hate that rule. And then, you know, I felt it was absolutely going to be, here they come, we're going to end up dropping this game. And for us to then get that turnover and the momentum to do a complete 180, where the Trojans actually responded to all that in a positive way and turn that into a positive, is a unique thing. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. Well, teams go in the tank when stuff like that and the adversity like that sort of happens to them. And USC didn't let that happen. And to go back to some of the points you made, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, Sark putting, you know, going a Dory Jackson against Ty Montgomery one-on-one in the end zone for a couple times, where they're targeting him, and the kid makes plays.
Loved it.
Steps up, and I mean, and Hadari making the kick. I mean, he almost didn't let him make the kick. Our offense was on the field, right? You know, he has the call timeout, and then out comes Hadari to make the kick and try for the kick. You know, however it's happening, it's working. And whatever those buttons that Sark is pushing, whether it's him pushing them or the players just stepping up and rising to the occasion, whatever that combination, that secret sauce is right now, it's working. And I'm just saying, it's a rare thing. We can go back and try to give all the credit to this, that, or the other and try to find the reasons why. But in reality, I think we all have to recognize this is a rare thing. Freshmen don't play like this. You know, kickers don't struggle through camp and have their job up for competition and then make a 50-plus yard kick. I mean, all these things that are happening, there's some secret sauce that's going on at USC right now that is just sort of fun to watch.
And then let's talk right now about a spot that you guys are going to want to discuss, the offensive line through the first couple games. What I think is very interesting, coming into camp, you had those two guard spots open. There was, hope Andre Walker can come back, hope Jordan Simmons can come back. They're the veteran guys. They haven't sniffed the field. It's been a whole lot of freshmen in there in the interior and a couple other guys. I want you two to give me your thoughts on where the offensive line is right now and what you like about it.
Well, I'll start and just say, you know, the thing that I love about this offensive line, you know, we used to have this expression, I'm sure Mike's heard it many, many times, if all else fails, hit somebody. And that, at the end of the day, the one thing this offensive line is doing is, even if they're freshmen, they're big and they're physical guys, and they took on probably the best defensive front that they're going to play against this season. And if all else fails, they got off the ball and hit people. And they may not have won every battle. You may have seen guys get beat on a play here or a play there. That's going to happen when you're playing, again, the best defensive front that you're going to play against all season. But, man, did they shy away from the battle one time? Not at all. They took it to them. Showed up play after play after play, kept battling. There were plays that didn't work. There were plays that didn't happen. You saw guys get beat in a pass protection here or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, you keep on a team like Stanford and you keep taking it to them. And that's why a Buck Allen does, you know, end up with the 154 yards rushing that he had and the big play that sort of, you know, really turned the momentum of the game when he broke one. You know, a lot of credit obviously goes to Buck, like we've talked about. But it's that young offensive line that, you know, 7-8 guys rotating in there playing that just keep getting off the ball and coming out and saying, hey, all else fails, we're going to hit somebody as hard as we can and try to be a physical offensive line. I think that, you know, hey, they didn't play a perfect game by any stretch, but, man, is the potential there for this group and Mike, maybe you can comment on this,
yeah,
to really mature and be a dominant, dominant offensive line towards the middle and second half of the season.
Well, the maturity part, I think, is the discussion point here, because you've got so many young guys. And Jeremy, if you think back to your second college football game, you know, it was okay. You're starting to get a feel. You're starting to understand what the competition is about, because you're going to get somebody that is that much better and trying to beat you. And there's a lot of growth that goes on from the second to the third game that you start in college. So did we see the best? Absolutely not. But the first thing that you get as an offensive lineman is how to run block. And this offensive line, I think, has done a very good job of running the football, and going against a front seven like Stanford has, that's a huge test. And to get by that, you've got to have nothing but confidence. So that part of it is great, and I anticipated that they were going to get pretty physical. As far as protecting the quarterback, there are some things that they're going to have to get. And again, when you're a young person, you're learning how to slide protections. You're learning when you're supposed to drop out. And I also will include the running backs in that. You know, you've got to go to the right side, and that's another thing that I think Buck Allen does better than the other running backs, is he understands where to go and he understands how to block. So that is a work in progress. But let's understand what the test was. It was Stanford. It was physical. You had to get up there and punch them in the mouth and run the football in a low-scoring football game. They did that. That's a victory. Put the check mark by the offensive line for USC.
Got to give a lot of credit to Coach Drevno so far and the job that he has done. Okay, we've talked a lot about things that went well, how USC was able to steal one. What needs to be addressed? What are things that you're looking at as we move forward? Just give a quick thought from each of you. What needs to be worked on right now?
Tackling. I think that, you know, the Sua Cravens scenario when he came in and didn't make that play, if he's going to come in and do that Shaq Thompson role, he's got to be able to come in and make that. That makes a huge play. So that's something that you've got to do. So on defense, if you turn into great tacklers, I think that's the one thing that I would love to see go along with that scheme. So from my perspective, defensively, that's what I want to see. And that's kind of it's a fundamental thing, and I definitely think they're going to get it, because I see some athletes. And shockingly, in the secondary, I have seen some things happen pretty well. I did see some improvement from the first game to the second one. And then offensively, I think that, you know, Jeremy and I both have alluded to it, pass pro has got to be better, and I think that's something that will be picked up with experience, and it's an opportunity for growth. Not that there are really glaring deficiencies on either side of the football, but you're asking for us to, you know, say something that might be able to get better. Those are two areas where I think the Trojans can improve.
Yeah, I really don't have much to add to Mike, because I agree wholeheartedly on those two things. And I would just add, with the tackling, you know, J.R. Tavai comes up big and makes that play at the end of the game. You know, he has a couple missed tackles earlier in the game that could have been sacks, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm glad for him that he made the play at the end of the game. I will say the only other thing I would add, and I don't know how much we were really playing and focusing on the run in the game that may have affected this, but I didn't see it much in Fresno State, and I didn't see it much at Stanford. I would love to see our pass rush, when we're not having to bring pressure and we're just got our four guys up front coming, our three or four guys up front coming, you know, can we get pressure on teams without having to bring a blitz? And our great USC teams, you know, traditionally have done that, and I haven't seen us really do that a lot yet. You know, we've gotten there when we've gotten the blitz, whether we're bringing sewer or overloading the side, like on the very last play that caused the fumble. But, you know, I'd love to see that front four, you know, have a little bit more penetration and a little more pressure on their own in passing downs.
Okay, one real quick here. Let's get your thoughts on, you mentioned earlier Pat Hayden and everything that went on with him. A lot of the national media is harping on this. What were your guys' thoughts of what went on with Pat?
Well, my first thought when you see Pat run down there, it was just sort of confusion. Like, what in the heck is he doing? Is there something you know, was going wrong that he actually needs to try to fix or address during the middle of the game? When you find out it's nothing but, you know, trying to hold Sark back or get in the middle of this officiating thing. It just had a strange, odd feel to it. And I'm sure many Trojans, you know, there have been a lot of Trojans critical of Pat that he hasn't fought things off the field, you know, sue the NCAA, all this sort of stuff, which I may not agree with, but there's a lot of Trojans that say that. They probably felt like, yes, go Pat, go. We've got an athletic director who's going to run down there and get in the mix. You know, but if you recuse yourself from being a biased Trojan fan and really look at it, you know, having an athletic director in any way sort of insert himself and try to influence officials or whatever it might be just leaves a bad taste. And I know he's apologized for it. Sark's apologized for even calling him down to begin with. I think it's easy to get caught up in the emotion of the game. It's clear he is emotionally connected with this team, invested in how these things go. And I think I love to see that part of him. But it was a weird dynamic, and I can, you know, you can almost promise you won't see it again.
But it's not unprecedented. I mean, it's happened before, and I've heard a lot of discussion about Barry Alvarez and, you know, some of the things that have gone on when he was athletic director at Wisconsin and a guy who had been a coach. You know, and Pat was a player, and Pat understands, you know, what's on the line here. As a fan, purely from a fan perspective, I think you love it because there is the emotion, and you see that he's emotionally invested in it the way that you are. But to Jeremy's point, you know, you're the athletic director of the University of Southern California. You don't want to have any appearance of impropriety, of overstepping your bounds. I think if Steve and if Pat had to do over again, clearly they would do it. But can't we say that about everything that we do when the emotions get up? I compare it to being a dad and your kids playing football. You would say and do things that you would regret later. So it's always better to try to maintain decorum and stay away from the situation. And I don't see Pat ever doing it again. It was unfortunate. It happened. But I think that the fans kind of needed that to see the support, to Jeremy's point, that he's in it with them. And for that reason, I think it went pretty well.
Okay, guys, less than a minute left here. A quick thought on Boston College, SC coming off a big game. How do you see this one going out?
I think you're going to see a lot of the run game. I think you're going to see a lot of Buck Allen. But I wouldn't be surprised if we, you know, take it to them pretty strong, have a dominant first half, and then get guys out of the game. You know, after Boston College, we're heading into a bye week. I don't think we'll have any letdown. Sark's already sort of taken that on head on. I don't expect that. I expect us to go in there, go do our work, treat it as a business trip, take it to them in the first half, get guys rested and play a lot of guys in the second half, get on to the bye week, and then look to the meat of the Pac-12.
Sark needs to do that because it's a classic trap. Coming off of an emotional high as players, and then you go and play a team that you probably don't perceive as being as tough as the one you did before. You've got to address that with your team and get through this game. Classic trap.
That's our report here for the We Are SC podcast this week. For Mike Lamb and Jeremy Hogue, this is Gary Paskowitz.